Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We're getting through the summer months here in training camp. Lucas is out in Owings Mills sweating it out with the fake football and hopefully no injuries. I am going to be eating it out all month long. 27 days, 27 ways, 27 places, 27 different price ranges as well, down to like, I think one of my items is $1.50, and maybe my most expensive one's 20 or 30 bucks. But it's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, where you can press your luck. The Lucky Sevens doublers, I'll be giving these away beginning on Thursday. We'll be at the Beaumont. We are counting them down. 27 days, 27 places that I really eat, my favorite places to honor our 27 years. I'm going to get rid of my 26th oyster. And along life's highway, I collect people and I sort of slot them and say, I want to get this guy on when this thing's happening. And the Philadelphia Phillies were playing the Orioles. And I started to think about, all right, I got to get some Philadelphia people on, some Philadelphia stuff. And it's not really about the Orioles because they stink. But even though this is happening and it's August, and my 27th item in all of this turns out to be the Philly Pretzel Factory, because I fell in love with those crazy pretzels when I was a kid. So, Bel Air, I'm coming for you on Tuesday. Robbie Inchbikowski has been my friend. I have known him since he was, and I don't want to be disrespectful, but I want to call you the hype man for the Baltimore Blast many, many years ago down at the then – it probably was First Mariner. It wasn't First Mariner. It was Royal
yes.
Farms. I don't know which
it was,
one.
It was First Mariner Arena, and then it was Royal Farms after that.
But you were Blast, not Spirit, right? It was the Blast.
No, it was Baltimore Blast. It was 2002 and 2000, or I think it was 03, 04. They won the title, I believe, both years.
They beat Milwaukee in 03. I was out there for that one. At the
and
Bradley
then 04,
Center.
Yeah, 04. Yeah, they won that on the road. And I can't remember who it was at home that they played, but that was a lot of fun, Ness, doing those Baltimore Blast games. I was at the Bowie Bay Sox as well. That was my first job holding a microphone, was between innings, 02, 03 with the Bowie Bay Sox, because a Philadelphia-based company, Comcast Spectacor, owned the Frederick Keys, the Bowie Bay Sox, and the Delmarva Shorebirds. And the president of all the minor league operations, they own a minor league hockey team in Philly too, the Philadelphia Phantoms, who have now since moved to Lehigh Valley. But they were run by a Philly guy who sent me down there and said, hey, you want to get some experience on the microphone? He sent me to Bowie, Maryland for the first
time. The first time you held a mic was in the Bowie Bay Sox Stadium, doing between innings, we're milking the cow, basically.
Yep. Crawfish catch, milking cows. I remember Travis Pastrana, who's a Baltimore native, was did a visit with us before he got super famous. I believe it was the Crawford's crawfish catch we did. There was a bunch
was
of
Phil
stuff.
Rye there then?
Phil, oh yeah. Phil Rye is a
legend
out there.
Yeah, he's a legend. Oh. Right.
Phil, I hope Phil sees us. What's up, Phil? That's my buddy, man. I love that guy. He's working for the Naval Academy now, I believe, part-time.
Dude, I didn't even know this about, like, I know you from Blast.
Yeah, I did the Bay Sox before that.
Well, I mean, I want to give you, like, all the flowers, because you spent two decades chasing the Pirates, the Twins. You worked in television. You literally did a job that maybe is a little bit what Rob Long and Melanie Newman do on Masson right now, or what,
yes,
you know, Amber Theo Harris was doing 20 years ago.
Amber was my colleague. Yeah, I know Amber. Yeah, she was my colleague when she was with the Orioles. I was with the Minnesota Twins. So I was fortunate enough to parlay a gig being the between innings MC for the Bowie Bay Sox, and then doing the Baltimore Blast during timeouts, halftime, pregame, postgame, all that stuff. Finishing that, I parlayed that somehow into 16 years as a reporter and host in Major League Baseball. I was with the Minnesota Twins for 4 years, Pirates for 11, and then last year I worked with the Texas Rangers, but I was a backup last year. But pretty cool experience. And this year, first time since 2008 that I haven't worked in baseball at all, and it's nice to be able to enjoy a summer here.
Well, what is it like? You're doing a book, you're doing stuff. I mean, I think when you made your And look, in the modern era, everybody like you who's collected friends, fans, family, viewers, listeners, readers, social media people, whatever, well
Right.
wishers. I mean, you've told stories. You put me on the air in Pittsburgh
I did.
when my wife had battled the first time we were doing the tour. Me, you, and Mike Tomlin, and my wife did a hit in
I remember
Pittsburgh
that. I remember
back in
that well.
2015. You did all the charity angles, all the community stories,
Did,
man
yeah.
in the stands. So, like, you collected a lot of people. You're a good guy on top of all of that.
Appreciate
But
that.
you grew up 2 blocks from the Vet in South Philly,
I
and I
did.
always think of you as like sort of born into that, like being a knothole gang kind of kid at the Vet, running around eating probably pretzels that I love,
Yes.
through all of that. But making this thing happen, you had to like give a social exit. Listen, I've had friends had to close businesses down and have to put that thing up like, hey, we're shutting down. I am literally today is my 27th anniversary today.
Congratulations. How
So
about that?
thank you. I haven't had to do that, but I've had to make a lot of changes. I've had to hire people, fire people. My wife's clearly her battles were all out there. But like that kind of message that you're like, look, I'm tired of being on this carousel of like chasing baseball teams. I chased my dream. I did. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people. I had Michael Buchdahl on this week who worked in sports. He worked for the Capitals, went on to do law things. And he said Brian Murray pulled him up outside of the Philadelphia. He told me this an hour ago. He said Brian Murray pulled him up after, the hockey career. And he said, you're a smart guy. You went to law school. Go buy tickets for sports and sit in the stands. You'll like it more than working in it. And I think for anyone who grew up like you and I did, there it's been very trying being in the media or having any part of the media in any way. We saw ESPN and NFL are now sort of co-linked. I feel for anyone, all of my friends, and I think like Brent Harris is a guy that I've known for years. It did sort of a similar job, a similar role. Rob Carlin's another guy. We mentioned the Bay Sox. He's involved down there for a minute. It's been very tough to be in the industry in any way in sports, behind the mic or in front of the mic.
Well, I think well, the business has certainly changed, that's for certain. I never thought, and I've talked to my colleagues, my bosses, my coworkers, everybody, just where we are in regional sports. And I know, Nestor, you're such a big fan of Masson and how that is run, right? it's just the way the business has changed has really impacted the way the business kind of operates. And I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but I guess my overarching point is we never thought we would see the day where TV rights for or regional TV rights for sports, major league sports teams would be where it is right now, just in terms of bankruptcy and where we are. Everybody's watching, TV here on a cell phone as opposed to on a television. So essentially, with streaming and YouTube and, Hulu, Netflix, all the subscription services that are out here, it really has impacted the way, you're seeing it in Major League Baseball now, just how teams don't spend money because the TV rights deals aren't there. People don't realize many of these owners could play in front of an empty stadium and still make money just because of their TV deals. So, with that said, yeah, I mean, I could chase a job in baseball all around the country, but I don't want to move from year to year. I just hit a point in my life. I'm turning 50 in a couple months, which is kind of hard to believe in itself, but some of it comes down to lifestyle. And you're right. And as you mentioned, sitting in the stands, I went with my buddies to about five or six games this year, Pirates games, that is, because I still live in Pittsburgh, is how much I enjoy watching baseball as a fan, how much I enjoy walking up to the ballpark, 15 minutes before first pitch, as opposed to going in at 3 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game and having a hustle for 3 straight hours. And then you get a quick bite to eat, you hurry some food down your throat in the press room and get ready for a pregame hit. Now, there's nothing wrong with all that. I loved it. I did it for 16 years. I made a great living. I've been very fortunate to do it. However, I realize as changes are happening and people, I don't know. I don't want to come off as bitter or angry because I'm really not. I'm thankful to have the time I had. But the bar has just been lowered for what the role has become a little bit. It's kind of like a little bit of a showy thing. Than it is like hardcore, telling good stories and, digging into people's connections and really making people root for the fans, or root for
Well,
the
my
players.
question is always knowing ball.
Yeah,
And
it's
that
more.
was always the bar that the players held me with my last name
Right, that's
Aparicio.
exactly right.
And it was like when football came back to Baltimore, Marvin Lewis pulled me into his office and challenged, and I have written about this, I've talked about it, Marvin and I have talked about it publicly. He
Right.
challenged how much I knew, and if I didn't know anything, what was I doing on the radio? And I should know
Correct.
more. So he and Jim Schwartz took it upon themselves to teach me more football.
Right. And now it's more a popularity contest on social media, than anything else. And it started around 2012, 13, 14 when social media became integrated into broadcast now. And I don't know, we just see a shift. And you know what, Nestor? I'm very, very lucky and I'm very fortunate. I'm very happy with the career I had. Working in Major League Baseball, I did the Minnesota Timberwolves as a host and reporter for 3+ seasons, Minnesota Wild, University of Minnesota Hockey, and then I did the Pirates and Pirates full time. Then I did Pittsburgh Penguins pregame and postgame, maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 games a year as the backup to the main guy. So I've been very blessed and fortunate, and that's what took me to where I am now. I wrote a book. We'll talk about that in a second, but I don't know, man. It's just kind of the business changes. And it's like, hey, I was in Texas last year and I loved it. It was a fantastic experience. But I realized I didn't want to move away from my family. It wasn't anything against the Rangers or against the Metroplex or the state of Texas. I loved it down there. It was amazing. Super hot in the summer, but it was amazing. But it was just bigger things matter now. Family matters, being able to go home and kind of figuring out what's next. Plus, I was outgrowing the role anyways. You can only at some point. The players are great, right? These players are fantastic at baseball. They're the best in the world at playing baseball. There's no arguing that. But at some point, I don't know, you kind of outgrow, a 22, 23-year-old baseball player making you wait for 30 minutes so he can give you 30 seconds of his time and act like you're annoying him, And it's like, I kind of had enough of that. Like, I don't know. And again, I'm not bitter or angry. It's just, I just outgrew the role. That's all. So I
I'm
feel like
glad
I.
you're confirming what my reality would
Oh,
be,
and
because
now.
I it doesn't have to be that way, but it's sort of managed, certainly here, it's managed that way by the leadership, and it's very, very unfortunate. And really what the teams have become are a reality show. It's as much like Hogan Rules or like the Osbournes, where every part of it is filmed, captured, edited,
Everything.
sanitized, and themed, quite frankly, and to fit the suit, whatever the Johnny Bravo thing is. And I'm like, I don't watch sports that way. I perceive it differently. I know it to be different from the inside out, that the real Hard Knocks is real, and that's the real story, not the sanitized version. And I also know, and being a hard scrabble South Philly kid, who grew up on Eskin and grew up on Conlin and grew up on,
I did.
all of that,
I did.
and grew up with Baldinger playing and being criticized.
Oh, yeah.
That part of the deal is, and this would make Joe Flacco different around here, is it sort of is part and parcel of, I heard Ben McDonald late into a broadcast the other day on trade deadline day. He was talking to Melly Newman. I literally had fallen asleep. It was an afternoon game. I woke up and they're doing way into the post game. And Ben was going on and on about Charlie Morton standing up in front of his locker, win or lose, being there, being accountable. And I'm thinking, these young guys are saying, calling us boomers for wanting accountability from this, because it's just not expected anymore. And
Well,
that's the reason to be in front of the locker, is to get an honest account of what happened, what could correct it, what went wrong, what went right, and then the credibility of the guy with the microphone or the typewriter or the radio, whatever it would be, the media outlet, is having the credibility to call it the way they see it. And that's a Philadelphia thing or a Baltimore thing, but it's certainly not an American thing, American sports thing,
Well,
in modern times, in modern times.
Well, first of all, I worked with Charlie for a couple of years with the Pirates, and he is absolutely one of the classiest humans. I know he got traded, but I remember when he signed his first contract extension with the Pirates. I think he got, I think it was around 20 million or close to it. I can't remember the exact numbers, nor is it relevant anymore. But I remember talking to Charlie after he signed it, and he was like, "Hey, man, how much money do you really need?" And that shows how grounded Charlie is, and I think a lot of fans might say that. You see a guy who's offered 500 million. No, I can get 600 million. Well, what's the difference between 5 and 600 million? Well, I mean, it's about setting a standard. It's not about the dollar value. So I learned a lot about that aspect of sports and how they operate, number one. And number two, you're right. There's not as much I don't want to say accountability because there's certainly a lot of accountability. And the Pirates, let me say for the record, the Pirates treated their media outstanding. They were really, really good to us as team partners. They were really good to me as their team reporter for 11
I want to
years.
say Jimmy Tredinich was always the greatest guy ever in Pittsburgh to me. So I want to give him full love.
Jimmy's great. Danny Hart. We had Patrick Kurz for a bit. Terry Rogers, who has left and come back, is A+. I mean, these guys are fantastic. The Pirates had a pretty good culture. But I think times evolve a little bit. Now players have become brands, right? They just have. You know, you saw Cordarrelle Patterson the other day break his own news about being released.
Paul Skeens is a rock star, right?
Right, and he's unbelievable. I've never worked with Paul. He was drafted my last year with the Pirates, so I've never even met him. But I know, you know, 30 people who work with him every day, and everyone says how unbelievable this guy is, how accountable he is, how hard he works, how great a teammate he is. And that's why he's a generational talent. It's a shame the Pirates are struggling his first 2 years with a generational talent like that. But I guess kind of I had a few things kind of crystallize a little bit in my head the last year, Ness. And look, I'm not going to generalize the whole business because there are so many players who are accountable, who stand there and answer the questions, win or lose, right? But ultimately, these guys are human beings who are great at baseball. They're not like – I'm not really impressed by how much money somebody has or, you know, they're just great. They're normal human beings with an unbelievable ability to play a game. And I realize now a lot of these guys who I covered – our personal, I have become personal friends who I still talk to quite a bit to this day. You know, when I'm doing the book, guys have reached out to me like, hey, man, whatever you need, you call me. So a lot of people have been really, really good to me from that aspect. But then there are other guys, like kind of a little bit of a younger generation. I'm not like an old man, get off my lawn thing, but it's like, hey, man, like I'm here trying to make you look good. So why are you going to look at me like I'm a real pain in your ass right now? Like I'm just asking a couple questions about baseball. I'm not asking about, you know, I'm not going below the line about anything. We're just talking a little bit of baseball, and that's all, because fans love that. We're an intermediary. You know, fans root for who they like. So my job was to make the fans like these guys. And it just became a little bit more difficult over time because where you feel like you're more imposing than you are helping. So I was kind of like, you kind of look at that, and it's like, all right, I'm 49. I'm not going to sit here for somebody just make me wait so I can do a 30-second sound bite. Like, that's insane. Like just
see, the reason they threw a guy like me out wasn't about that. The reason they threw a guy like me out is they didn't want me asking questions about Justin Tucker. They didn't like it when Lamar ran the ball 21 times in a game and had to play 4 days later. I asked about it. How dare I? So when you're trying to limit what questions I'm allowed to ask,
it's crazy.
That
crazy.
Is no longer. That compromises every part of my integrity over 40 years of doing this.
Right.
And dude's not going to abide. You know what I mean? It's just, it's not my role to do that in regard to billionaires or millionaires or 100 millionaires in the case of John Harbaugh, who should have to answer questions about going down and standing with Donald Trump and not being proud enough to take a picture, but hiding it. And they should have to answer questions about Justin Tucker. And they should have to answer questions about drafting a kid who had sexual assault allegations in college. They should have to answer questions about how a guy who went out and blew a double deuce on a DUI that they would then bring him back in, it wasn't even a starter, and give him fresh money and a fresh contract. Like, that's all happened in the last 5 months here.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, that's all happened in the last since January here.
Oh wow.
So and that's why they don't want people
it's
like me
different.
Around.
And it's more like ass kissing and trying to be everybody's buddy, which I'm okay with. You want to be, because when you develop relationships, I feel like you kind of get better stories. You know, me developing relationships with the guys, you know, mom, dad, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, son, daughter, anybody, you really, and you earn trust over time. And I've been very, very fortunate, which is quite frankly, Ness, what enabled me to do this book are my relationships that I've created around the game. And, you know, I interviewed 122 different people for this book. And it was like, I look back on it and it's like, wow, how was I able to get this story, that story? Well, it's kind of relationships, and you know that I'm not a gossip mongerer, you know, and unfortunately, as you know, a lot of people just sit down, they just tweet and they never show up, and they cause headaches. And what happens is that kind of bleeds into the credibility of all the good media members out there, because there are a lot of good ones. And you're right. Tough questions should be asked. Like, it's not like, oh, you can't ask a question about, you know, what happened with Justin Tucker, or, you know, I'm personally, I've always thought sports should just be sports, and politics on both sides should just stay out, because sports is like a refuge to me. That's my personal opinion. But I get it. We're not in that era anymore. That's how it goes these days. So, okay. So just have it both ways and have it both sides. That's the only thing I always really wanted, was criticize both sides equally. And these people are human beings. John Harbaugh, Super Bowl winning football coach, great guy, comes from a great football family. But ultimately, he's just John Harbaugh. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I don't know. Maybe I just view it differently because I'm not in it now. But these guys, like, I don't need to be their friend. I just want to work with them, tell their stories, and then we both go about our business. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's kind of changed.
Well, then there's relationships like you and me that, you know, we meet at a blast game, and here we are. Robbie Inchmikowski my dude. He is up in Pittsburgh. He has covered sports for 2 decades. If you remember the hype man at the blast games or the old Bay Sox games, yeah, he's that guy. But I always think of you with Baldinger 20 years ago and him trying to get you into the business. And Baldy and I have remained close all these years later, and he's got his thing going on with his breakdowns, and he's running around camps. He was here in Baltimore last week, and I text him up about eating some good food. And I think of you as the South Philly guy who really part of that media thing that you know about, even though you worked on the inside for the team with the mic, with the flag and all of that, is you know the criticism's part of this, going back to Mike Schmidt, going back to Dr. J, going back to like your childhood and all of that in a town like Philly, 5 miles away from Flacco, who understood it that way. The next generation doesn't understand it that way in the same way, for sure. But there is something about you wanting to make a life in sports that was about you growing up in Philly. I mean, look, last month was 40 years for Live Aid. I attended Live Aid, so I had my buddies on who did it in London. We did a big thing over beers at 1623. But I've been coming to Philly forever and ever and ever, and there really is a demarcation. I swear to God, when I run around the Joe Biden bathrooms on 95 there, where you pull off, like when you come out of there, you pass that little Starbucks out of there. Used to be a little Sbarro's and a little Circle bathroom there with pizza.
Oh yeah.
Now it's Gucci and Hoochie Coochie and Popeyes and whatnot, Joe Biden, the whole deal. Once you go out of there, you hit your Blue Ball Avenue and your Wilmington, you're in Philly. You know what I mean? Like, my cousins grew up in Newark, right at 896, right by the stadium at the Delaware. Like, right about there, north, everything's Philly, Philly, Philly. The Philly thing makes a lifetime of a kid like you running around Minnesota and Pittsburgh and doing all of that. I mean, it was really all Philadelphia based, which is why I reached you on this Phillies thing. Like, once a Philadelphia guy, like always to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's a special fraternity, you know, that everybody has in Philly. And the one thing I've come to realize is the level of sports fandom in each place, which is kind of cool. You know, Philly fans are obviously in your face. They're loud. You know, they're rude at times. You know, the old 700 level at the Vet was a circus act and all that. But, you know, their passion and their authenticity is something you can't replace, which is kind of why I love Baltimore too, because Baltimore sports is, again, it goes back decades and generations. Same thing you could say for Pittsburgh. I lived in Phoenix, Arizona too, and it's such a transient city that it's hard to find fans of like the Phoenix Suns from, you know, the 80s and 90s these days. You know, it's just different. It's different. But yeah, when you talk about Philly, I mean, they're in your face. It's, I mean, ultimately they're good people. They're welcoming people, but sometimes it gets a little aggressive, gets to be a little bit too much, but you're right, man. Like Philly, Sixers, Flyers, Eagles. I mean, it's being a Philly sports fan is like no other. And the national reputation that they have sometimes is deserved. Sometimes it's unfair, but you're right. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think, Ness, you know, an hour and a half up by 95, you've got Philly fans, you've got, you know, Eagles fans, you know, and then you go down to Baltimore and you got Orioles, you know, you got the Ravens, you know, and
well,
it's
I was
just
in Dewey Beach last week, and I'm going to be in Ocean City next week for Mako doing the show.
Right.
The amount, the infiltration that you'll see, especially in Ocean City, of Pirates, Steelers, Eagles,
Everything.
Phillies, Ravens, and Orioles. Like, it's a confluence there where
Everything.
you really see the Philadelphia element
Right,
of
right.
everybody wearing the hats and what a big deal those brands are. And I guess that would be my point to you, is it led you on a passion for sports
Oh.
that you still haven't dropped. You're still doing books on sports at 50, but like it's been your whole life because sports was that important to you.
Oh,
And it's
yeah.
not that important to the SoCals who grew up in San Diego. No offense to Adam Jones, but it's just not that important in the
Well, there's
way that
other
it's
th
important in our communities.
well, there's other things to compete with too. I mean, Adam Jones grew up in San Diego. You have the beach, you have, you got Gaslamp
Beach,
Quarter, you got,
beach.
yeah, you be, but you got great weather. There's so many things, surfing, beach, there's so many things you could do out there. You know, in Philly, in the winter, I mean, it's Eagles and you're having beers. Like, that's kind of what it is. Let's just be realistic. You know, you're not battling six other things that you could do, in the winter. You know, in the winter in San Diego, it's still 75 degrees outside. In Philly, you're lucky to get the 35, 45, in December, January. Excuse me. So it's just kind of, I don't know. I love it, man. I embrace it all. And when I live in Pittsburgh, I tell people I'm from Philly. They go, they roll an eye. I'm like,
Dude,
dude,
you
I
lived in
don't.
Minnesota. You saw some cold ish.
Oh, let me tell you something. That Minnesota cold, man, let me tell you something. I tell people for 3 months a year, there is nowhere else you'd rather be on planet Earth than how beautiful Minnesota is in the summer. But when you get to the winter months, oh my God, you'd rather be anywhere else but there. It is so cold,
Dude,
man.
when
It
Luke
is.
and I were standing under the French fry stands and waiting for a bus, a shuttle bus, to take us from the Mall of America back to our hotel, our courtyard in Bloomington,
Yeah.
right across the Ritchie
Yeah.
Highway there. It looked like White Marsh Mall, but bigger, Mall of America. I loved that week. I loved everything about it, other than the Eagles fans being there. I'm making that up, but it would have been kind of fun if Minnesota had the home game. But I spent that week there, and I love Minnesota, and I come up. I will come for concerts to fight the mosquitoes as big as
Oh,
my head.
yeah.
I'll do all of that. But there is something about you don't forget when you're like Ralphie and you look down, and it's literally five below, and you've got radio equipment that you're hoofing out of the second floor of the mall, and you've been in this giant mall, and now you're out under this French fry, literally orange lights like a French fry,
Yeah.
waiting for your bus to come to put
Crazy.
you on, and it's five below. And then there's that Juicy Lucy, which I kind of thought was overrated. I mean, he and I did the Juicy Lucy at the little bar, and it just wasn't, maybe it was the cheese, I don't know, man, but like conceptually, I like the Juicy Lucy, but like, let's be real, man. I mean, maybe I need to eat some sturgeon or some walleye or something, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a big thing there too, but yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, but it's territorial, like, nobody asks somebody outside of Minneapolis what a Juicy Lucy is. They have no idea, And then in Minnesota, Juicy Lucy, oh, where are you going? You going to the match? You going this place, that place? And it's
So I
all.
got to go to several different places for Juicy Lucy's.
Yeah, I think it's a big
All
thing.
right.
I'm not a burger eater, so it wasn't my thing, but I know what the con they put the cheese inside the burger, cook it, grill
Yeah.
it, it melts, you open it up, the cheese drops out and
It's
everything.
gooey. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very popular. I'm sure people love it. Just, wasn't something I was personally into, but I mean, it was cool, man. It's been a great life in sports. It's been a great, all these experiences have been awesome, working with three baseball teams, a couple NBA teams. It's been, it's hockey teams. It's been real cool, man. I'm thankful for all the experiences of all of it. You can tell great life stories like this,
Well, let's tell the book story because I got to get the book out. Robbie Apikowski's here. He is hanging in Pittsburgh. Last gig there was covering the Pirates and the Penguins and some other stuff. Now you are sort of what is going on in your real life? This is my chance to catch up.
So what I did was I elected last year, and not and that's not to assume that they would have hired me anyways, but the Rangers were looking for a full-time reporter, the Texas Rangers. And after realizing kind of where I was in my life, I thought, you know what, I don't want to chase a job in baseball. I had some discussions with other teams for a part-time role, but again, the logistics of it are just so hairy, and you spend so much time away from home. So I said, you know what, I traveled, Ness, in 2017. The Pirates were having, they were going to play opening day at Fenway Park in Boston. And if you remember around that time, that is when cell phones really started to advance in terms of technology and how cell phone cameras were getting just so good and so advanced. And it was around that time when we started to realize that the camera on your cell phone was taking pictures almost good as the camera that you bought. So, it's kind of crazy, like a real camera. So I decided to buy a digital camera because the prices were dropping. And for like $400, I can't remember. I'd love to look up what I paid for. I think it was like $400, $450. I bought this little compact Sony digital camera, and it took unbelievable pictures. So I was like, you know what? I want to capture opening day at Fenway Park. And then I caught the bug, Ness. I started taking pictures of every ballpark around Major League Baseball. And I realized at some point in time I wasn't going to have this job forever. So if I'm going to have a chance to travel Major League Baseball and get paid for it, make a living doing it, then I'm just going to enjoy the free time I have at the ballpark. So I would go to the ballpark an hour early, a lot of days, and just walk around for an hour and just take pictures while the ballpark was empty.
You're talking
And
to a guy on a show who did 30 ballparks in 30 days that you were a part of. So,
right.
no one appreciates
So
that
you know
more than
what that's
I.
like,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
So my goal, Ness, originally was to just make like a Shutterfly album, personally for myself, like just have it in my house. And I'm like, you know what? I'll put 50 pictures from every ballpark in there. And if people come over and they're in the ballparks, they can just see a bunch of cool pictures and just flip through, check out each ballpark. You have questions, ask them. If you want to go to a place, ask me. And then I sat down with an author who I met. I had coffee with an author, a guy named Kyle Fager, who co-wrote the book with me. And I asked him to have I asked him to go to a coffee shop to have lunch and coffee. And I brought my camera. I said, "Hey, I have this crazy idea, and tell me if you think I'm stupid or smart or anywhere in between." I said, "What if we started calling people associated with each ballpark and got stories associated with each place? But maybe we don't get the main story, but maybe we get the story behind the story." So I started racking my brain and saying, "Who do I know associated with each place?" And then what I did is I started searching for whatever the top 10 moments were, top 5 or 10 moments were at every ballpark. What are the big moments in baseball history that happened at current ballparks? So we only did current ballparks. We did not do any other ballparks. And Oakland does count as a current ballpark. We did an ode to baseball in Oakland, so that counts. But we just decided to do every ballpark. So, for example, I looked at Baltimore, and a guy you know who's a very close friend of mine, Joe Douglas, worked for the Baltimore Ravens, helped them win a World Series, World Series, Jesus, helped them win two Super Bowls. And then he went to the Eagles, helped them win another Super Bowl. And Joe, people may not realize, grew up in Richmond, Virginia. He is a diehard Cal Ripken and Baltimore Orioles fan. Then he ends up working for the Ravens. So we spend an hour talking on the phone. He's like, "Hey," we stop recording, and he tells me a story. He says, "Hey, man, here's one you'll appreciate." And he tells me the story of when the Ravens lost the AFC Championship game in 2011. Okay. So they're in Baltimore. They lost a tough game. I want to say it was the Patriots who beat them. I'm almost positive it was 2011, but I have to go back and check my notes on that. But anyways, it was a crushing loss. And John Harbaugh gives this, great speech about, how the days are long, but the years are short. Ray Lewis goes in and talks. And then they kneel down for this prayer. And Joe Douglas is kneeling, and he feels this hand. He's like, "This hand is huge, and I'm holding." He doesn't even look. He just gets down and holds a hand. Whose hand is it? Cal freaking Ripken is next to him, and he had never met him. This is his childhood idol. All of a sudden, he's holding his hand in the locker room of the Ravens after they lose the championship game. And Cal was just standing way in the back, staying out of the way. And I guess he had, obviously had been invited or whatever. But that is a little anecdote. That story is in my book. So, just kind of cool anecdotes like that. And I'll give you one more
Now,
relating
when I
to ball.
see Cal, I'm going to ask him about that because that was the Billy Cundiff game when Cundiff
Yes.
missed the kick.
Yep.
Man, that was you talk about Stan, dude.
Crushing loss.
In a media term, that was 11 years ago, 12 years ago now that we're talking about that. Well, actually, 13 years ago they lost. 12 years ago they won, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So
Yeah.
they lost that Cundiff game this year. Mark Andrews dropped the ball
I
in
remember that.
Buffalo,
Yep. Yep.
didn't show up at the podium at all.
Right.
Billy Cundiff missed the kick. Billy Cundiff was the first one
Right.
at the podium because I was there.
Right.
And Lee Evans, who dropped the ball and
Remember
got the
that?
ball stripped in the back, he
Yep.
stood at his locker and
Answer
answered every
questions.
question.
Yep.
And that's the way it used to work. It doesn't
Yep.
now it doesn't work that way anymore,
Right.
right?
Right. Because social media is a big reason why. But and you're right. But so here's another cool one. So you know what I did, Ness? This is crazy. So I looked up. So for ball, I'm just putting the and that, there's stories. Every ballpark is a chapter, and we have highlight pieces between each chapter from random people. Baldy is one talking about the pace of football versus the pace of baseball. How football's a violent collision every 30 seconds. Baseball in 30 seconds, you have time to tell a story about somebody's grandma, you know, and a pitch might not even be thrown in 30 seconds. So he talks about the beauty of the pacing of baseball. But anyways, I looked up the box score from the night Cal Ripken broke the streak. And I was looked around like, I wonder if I know anybody that played in that game. As it turns out, I do. Jeff Houston, former utility infielder who calls himself the Forrest Gump of baseball, has been part of some major baseball moments, is he started at third base next to Cal the night Cal broke the streak. And I'm like, this would be a cool perspective. Everybody's heard from Cal on the streak. What was it like for the other guys that night? What was it like in the clubhouse? What was it like standing 30, 45 feet, 30 feet from Cal when he sets that record? Jeff Houston made the last out before the game became official in the bottom of the fourth inning, top of the fifth, the game's official, right? So, like, he launches into the story about how it was he and Jeff Manto, they were playing the California Angels that night. And him and Manto, because one guy would play when a righty pitched, Houston would play when a righty, Manto would play when a lefty pitched. And they started looking because you knew when Cal was going to break the record. You knew that months in advance when that was going to happen. So what they did was they started looking at the rotation and they realized it was going to be a righty facing the Orioles that night. So Houston got the start. So he sent me a picture. He's got these great photos autographed by Cal, and he gave us one of them of Jeff when Cal's, you know, tipping his cap and Houston standing there cheering for him. And it's just pretty cool to get that account of that night, you know, what it was like. Picture of him shaking President Clinton's hand as he walked through the clubhouse before the game. Just so many cool stories like that are going to be in there. So that's
Just
kind of
one
the.
perspective. It's a snapshot. I got you.
Correct. Yeah.
I
And
like that.
it's quick reading, it's quick stories, and then the QR code links to the site where if people really want to dig into it and have time, they can do that. So they have time to you know, read each transcript, each story, all different kinds of things. So it's been, I mean, it took a year to put it all together. It's been ridiculous to do. Just when you're corralling you're nailing people down for interviews and you're setting times and you're transcribing.
I do that all day.
Yeah, exactly. But to do it in book form and then produce the website. So it's a web the website's parallel with the book. So it's kind of a little bit of a twist on media with where we're going, you know, utilizing the technology, you know, like QR codes, and it takes you right to a site where you can read more about it. So just a bunch of stories, like probably about 125, 130, I don't know how many exactly, but over 120, probably about 130, 140 stories in this book that you're gonna get.
Do
So
you
it's
have
pretty
anywhere to
cool.
find it, Robbie, so we can go
So
get this?
yeah, so the book is called Sacred Grounds. And so we decided I wanted to do everything by myself to oversee the whole project. I wanted to be in charge of everything. So it's at my personal site, Robbie Ince, RobbyInc.com, RobbyInc.com. You could click on the book and you could see a bunch of photos, read a bunch of stories. There's a whole bunch of stuff on there you could read. Doesn't cost anything. We're not charging people to go on there. We just want people to buy the book, support the project. $55 book, $5 shipping. It's pretty reasonable. It's really going to be high quality. We're going to come out in November with the physical book. So I appreciate you giving me a chance to talk about this,
Well,
Ness.
man, I just it's summer. We haven't gotten together in a while. I
Yeah.
didn't know what had happened, and I saw your sort of goodbye to I'm not going to be doing the
Yeah.
baseball thing, and
Yeah.
I just, out of concern and friendship. But then the Philadelphia
Yeah.
thing happened, and I saw you were doing the book, and I'm
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm getting my dude on. I had no idea this started with the Bowie Bay Sox.
Dude,
I
it's
like
crazy. The
the
whole.
things I learn when you go deeper into friendships that you've had for 30
Yeah,
years, you know.
the whole journey started Bowie, Maryland, then to Baltimore, and then Philly, and then I went on my own to Arizona, and that's where everything kind of took off from there. So I'm really, really lucky to to do what I've been doing now. So believe me, there's not an ounce of bitterness or anger inside my soul. I'm very thankful to spend 16 years as a Major League Baseball announcer, and I'm just real thankful for it. Happy to be able to tell stories like this to you.
Robbie Inspikowski's out there. You can find him at a Robbie INC. He's also out in social media and doing all that stuff. And
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
we'll always have our night with Bert Blyleven. I mean,
Yes.
that will always be, I know how Bert treasured it, trying to hand me his 1979 World Series ring that I would refuse to touch. So
That's right.
as a
Sorry
Baltimorean.
about that. I know. Pirates beat the Orioles. I know. I'm sorry. It's a
Circle me,
good
Bert.
one. Yeah.
Circle me.
I would say we did that every day in Minnesota for a long time. That was our hit. That you talk about lottery. It was Circle Me Bert, brought to you by the Minnesota State Lottery. Circle them. We gave them some lottery tickets, and we had a great sponsorship deal back in the day, about 15 years ago.
Well, I have pressure luck, but I'm not going to put the whammy on you. Hey, last
No.
thing for you. It's my 27th anniversary, literally today, as we're recording this. I'm doing my 27 favorite things to eat. It's brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, as well as Curio Wellness, which is why I'm wearing my Blunt Person shirt. Every day this month, I'm going to drop a vignette and a quick story and some food of the places that I really love the most. So all month long, I'm driving to Ocean City. So there's a couple of Ocean City things going on and places along the way that involve not so much crab cakes. There'll be a couple of crab cakes involved in this, but like the Philly pretzel to me is, and I explained this to Micah Buchdahl a little while ago.
Nothing better.
Being out in front of the Spectrum in the 80s, Live 8 in 85, I went up to the vet to see Strawberry play and Gooden and to see Fernando pitch and to see Oral Hershiser and Eddie Murray when he was with the Dodgers. So, I mean, I've been going to the vet since 80, 81, whatever. So the pretzels, they were like a thing there then, but the internet wasn't a thing, the cheesesteak thing. Tasty Cakes, Schmidt's beer. There were some Philadelphia things, right? But the pretzels were always what I would get when I would leave to get on 95 at Broad to get the hell out of there to go up over the bridge where it always smells like Uranus. And I don't mean the planets. So, you know what I mean? Like when you're driving over where that smokestack is. But while I smelled not Saturn or Neptune or Pluto, I'm always eating out of one of those bags that I got from those kids with
Pushing a shopping cart.
the grocery shopping carts, right? With the pretzels, right? So then in 92, the Phillies are trash, right? Nobody's going to the vet, but Camden Yards has 3.8 million people. Every night in Baltimore, and I was like you, a reporter going down early, walking through the city when there's 3 million people going to Oriole games. There were always vendors sell from Philly who would come down
So
and sell
pretzels.
pretzels and made it a little bit of a Baltimore thing where like Messina and I would eat them after games on the way to Hooters. We would buy a pretzel walking out, right?
And the
35 years
pretzel
ago.
and
So
the no,
Philly Pretzel Factory is the chain that does them. They're in Bel-Air, and anytime I get near Bel-Air, it's like finding a Waffle House north of Richmond. When you're near it, the Philly pretzel is my number 27, and it's not really even because like we're playing the Phillies or you're coming on or I'm gonna get to go to Bel-Air on Tuesday and get one. It's just sort of like I think it needs to be featured. It's one of my favorite things to eat. I go out of my way to get it.
There's nothing like a South Philly pretzel. Federal was the place where we went to Federal Pretzels, and when we had a chance to drive into town and get them, it was something special. Now, pretzels used to be a quarter a piece. That's maybe I'm showing my age now. I went to go to the Philly Pretzel Factory. I think I paid like $2. I'm like, I just paid $2 for a pretzel that should cost 50 cents right
Dude,
now.
$3 for $5, and it's a bargain at any price. It's like
Which
kissing the
is.
Fonz.
Right, it's the but pretzels are there's nothing better like the middle pretzel when they went like
Oh,
not the end. I like the
out of the
middle.
oven, though. Right out of the oven.
Right. There is no better food that I grew up eating more than the Philly pretzel. Cheesesteaks, yeah, it's like crab cakes in Baltimore, cheesesteaks in Philly. They're all delicious. I love the food at Camden. I love that place. My second favorite ballpark in the country is Camden Yards. But the Philly pretzel is unmatched. There is no
What's
close
your
second.
number one stadium? I'm not going to let you do that.
PNC Park. It's
Oh,
just
you're just
beautiful.
being a homer. It's beautiful.
No,
It's
partially,
nice.
yeah, but you know what? You can't
Dodger
beat aesthetics.
Stadium, Royal State. Those are my places. Dodger
Royals are
Stadium.
great. Dodger Stadium's a giant pain in the ass to navigate. Don't get me started on Dodger Stadium. It's beautiful when you get in, but getting there and navigating it is brutal. Being a reporter there, not an easy experience. But point being, Yeah, it's the Philly pretzel's unbelievable. Camden Yards is the greatest, and I love that place. And I love Baltimore, and I love being on your show. I love all this mess. I love Baltimore, man. It's one of my all-time favorite places to be.
Where, do you have a Baltimore place that when you come in, you
Yes.
go?
Yes.
Where's
Every
your
time.
place?
All right, can we mention names? It's my favorite.
Anything you want, it's plug away.
Now, I think you might know this because you and I ate there with Burt Blyleven years ago.
You
Sabatino's.
go to Sabatino's for the bookmaker.
Oh,
Do you
right
get the
on Fawn
bookmaker?
Street
Good for
in
you.
Little Italy. I Renato, my boy. What's up, Renato, if you're listening? It is my favorite stop. And when I look around the country, because in Major League Baseball, you find restaurants in every baseball city. I could tell you restaurants to eat in every city, in every baseball city in the United States of America. Nothing tops Sabatino's for a few reasons. The food is off the charts. Number one. Number two, they're very baseball centric. So I could send a text to Renato when I'm in Baltimore and say, hey man, how late are you going to be open? I can zip in at, 10:45 and get a late night dinner. I eat two dinners a night just so I can have a dinner at Sabatino's after the game.
Listen, I'm
And
partial
go
to
there for lunch the
Michi's.
next day.
Everybody knows that I'm an Michi's guy. And listen,
I love Amici's too. I've been there too. I love
I had no problem sitting upstairs with you and Burt Blyleven having a bookmaker, and I didn't touch his 1979 World Series ring. But you did take me to lunch with then not Hall of Famer Burt
Correct.
Blyleven,
Definitely.
and literally, if you would ask him to bet his life, every nickel he'd ever made, and his wife and his children, as to whether he would get in that day, he would have said, "They're not putting me in."
Correct.
Like he really didn't believe he was ever going to have that day, and he told me, "If they ever put me in, I'm going to get up, and my speech is going to be F you, I deserved it the whole time." I never forgot that, you know.
Right.
And then
Well,
I watched to see that he actually didn't do that. But I know he wanted to do that because
yeah.
Bert, I mean, Bert's a legend, dude. I mean, you
He
got to work
is
with a legend.
3,700, one strikeouts, 287 wins. You won't see those numbers ever again, brother. You
My
won't.
dad took me to the ballpark in 77, 78 to see him pitch for the Twins, Rod Carew, all of that. My dad loved Oliva. He
Right.
loved, my
Oh,
dad
yeah.
loved
Tony's great.
baseball.
Yeah. Tony's a great guy. Yep.
All
Tony's
right, I got to
awesome.
let you go. All right,
Yes.
Robbie, I appreciate you. I love you. I miss you. Have fun. Good luck with your book.
Yes. Thank
And
you.
let's, hey, anytime you want to come to
Hey,
Sabs,
buddy.
I'll take you to Sabs, bro.
I'll be
Anytime.
down there and I'll see you soon, pal. You're the best, Ness. Thank you for having me.
I'm going to get the big shrimp on there. He's Robbie Ink Bukowski. You can find him anywhere the internet serves funny spellings of names. INC, like the business. MikOskiY. Because we like you. I'm Nestor. We are Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.